We're back and we're going to talk about the last of our prehistoric freaky land guys, which is going to lead into our next section.
I'm so excited.
So, oh, he looks great.
So you've heard about like this crocodile thing, right?
I've heard of them. I've been known to crocodile.
Yeah, like how they're always tearing a person to pieces every 3 months in far north Queensland.
And they deserved it.
And they deserved it.
Absolutely.
Well, I'd like to introduce you to the Mary River Gharial. Now, a gharial is a gharial is a type of crocodilian.
Fucking trollop.
Which is like your standard big aquatic reptile, right? It looks a bit different to a croc in that it has a super skinny mouth and it predominantly eats fish. Gharials are like
That's
endemic.
That's me. Deadass.
Gharials are endemic to India, predominantly.
Right, so gharials are real, right? Like they're
so a gharial is real. Yeah. Like it is a real type of crocodilian. You know, it's similar to crocodiles and alligators. It's just kind of like a different take on that type of beast, evolutionarily. But what makes the Mary River gharial interesting is that unlike regular gharials or regular crocodiles, eyewitnesses claim it has paddle-like fins instead of legs. Huh. Now, the image I have here is just like your standard gharial.
Mm.
So you'll have to imagine it with flippers.
Right, so a crocodile thing with a big snout.
Yes.
A big, long, thin snail.
Long.
And flippers.
Yes.
It's like a...
Imagine it wore like flippers.
So like imagine
that,
a dolphin,
scuba divers
a dolphin if it was a crocodile.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, or if you can imagine like a plesiosaur, but like Leopleurodon with like
Yeah,
crocodile.
I'll just imagine a Leopleurodon.
Okay, don't worry about it. Anyway... experts of this beast say that it could be a descendant of a prehistoric crocodilian. However, the Mary River, being located in Queensland, is home to a bunch of bog-standard, definitely-exist crocodiles. So is the Mary River gharial just a freak? Like, is this just like a deformed crocodile that people have claimed to have seen? Maybe the sightings are just people not fully seeing an incredibly camouflaged water creature.
Mm.
You know, who's to say? There's not too much in terms of like photographic evidence or anything. Like, we don't have photographs. This is basically people being like, I saw this fucked looking crocodile. It looked like a gharial, but it had fins instead of like flippers instead of legs. I don't know. There's a lot of shit in far north Queensland.
I think, look, I'm going to say straight up, absolutely, the Mary River gharial exists. It has its flippers. I'm going to say it has flippers and legs.
Shit.
Why the fuck not, you know? Like, this is what it's not even, this isn't even a crocodile. It's a spider that's evolved.
Yeah, that's what I was, it's got flippers and legs, which means it has.
Eight appendages.
It's a spider.
It's a spider that's evolved
to have. It's an aquatic spider.
It's like how we have marsupials who look like cats. This is a spider that looks like a crocodile with fins.
I respect it.
Yeah.
Fully believe. But this does bring us to our next bag of critters. So please give a warm welcome to Wet Guys.
Wet Guys!
Yay, Wet Guys! Here's our first wet guy.
Shut up.
The Hawkesbury River Monster.
Exactly.
So, the Hawkesbury River in New South Wales has produced reports of large reptilian or eel-like animals since 1924.
Yeah.
And the... Yanni, please keep yourself together right now. This is very serious.
Yeah,
this is no laughing matter.
I'm sorry. The Hawkesbury River Monster since the 1900s.
And the indigenous Darug people of the Gadigal area have had such a being in the oral tradition since ancient times, which is whence the name Miriula comes from, meaning giant water serpent.
Miriula, giant water serpent.
The ever reputable cryptid wiki tells us that sightings of the creature have been reported from Wiseman's Ferry at the western end of the river, eastward of the Broken Bay Brisbane Waters Expanse at the river's mouth. Mm. In the 1980s, some fishermen reported that the Hawkesbury River Monster catapulted them right out of their boat.
What, it just slams on one side, the boat's like, whoa.
Yeah, like, just like in the cartoons.
Like you've stepped on a fucking rake or something.
Yeah, it's exactly like fucking Looney Tunes, you know? In 1912, a story from the Evening News in Sydney called What is the Bunyip? Something Will Answer Soon, said that the Miriula is a strange object swimming a short distance from them, about 4 feet in length and resembling an alligator. There have been reports of them a hell of a lot bigger than that. And the Windsor and Richmond Gazette called it a Titanic seahorse in 1924. we saw a big, ugly thing.
And I took offense to that, so I said,
2 foot 6 inches to 3 foot in depth, for some reason. I don't know why they're measuring it in depth.
3 foot in depth, we saw an ugly thing.
Yep. With a length of about 5 to 6 feet and a yellowish or sandy color. Whether its skin was scale covered or not, we could not see. We watched for 15 minutes. It had a square-looking fishtail. It was not a pleasant-looking animal. Water cryptids are always fascinating because you just know there is, like, something out there in the water. Like, there has to be.
Yeah, we're not down there.
Like, obviously.
I can't breathe there.
Absolutely not. I can try. I won't succeed.
Please, darn. No one needs you to.
Well, what if someone does need me to? For science?
Breathe underwater?
I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
Someone might need me for science.
If science asks you to, then science is wrong. I'm anti-science.
Oh, hey, anti-science.
Hey, anti-science.
I'm dad.
Oh, yeah. Well, I must be, I guess, your sister, science.
Damn, that's crazy.
Anti-science?
Anti-science.
Hey, it's me, anti-science.
Anti-science? Is this the Trap-Barth split?
Yeah, it's the Trap-Barth split. I'm an aunt.
Fuck.
Sorry, are we done on the Hawkesbury? Because I do want to speak about the
Please
image.
Speak.
Please.
Speak.
That looks like a kid has died and is floating.
No, straight up. It looks like it's a floating body.
It's just a floating body. Like a kid's died in the Hawkesbury River. There is a photo on the screen of, what is that? Is that someone being like,
That's
I found the Hawkesbury River monster?
That's
yes, I can see
the
speedboat in the background coming up to...
If anything, that looks like it's a person who is like treading on their back. It's just kind of like relaxed in the water.
In maybe in a wetsuit.
Exactly,
it's like
yeah.
if... like the. You know the famous photo of the Loch Ness Monster?
Yeah.
Imagine if it was even less legit
in
every way. Imagine that Loch Ness Monster was clearly just a meth head.
Yep.
That's...
with like a very, I don't know, no nose for some reason?
Yeah, no nose, like a real fucked up... All right, that's the Hawkesbury River Monster.
Yep.
Perfect.
Wow.
A meth head.
So, Yanni, you're scared of the ocean, right?
Very terrified.
Well, would it ease your mind to know that there's a giant black sperm in the water surrounding Hook Island in Queensland?
A giant black sperm?
Yes. Giant black sperm. Exactly what it sounds like.
Look, I think it doesn't change my view of the ocean at all. We're not meant to be there. It's where the giant black sperm is.
If anything, it confirms your
it
fear.
It confirms, yeah, validates it. Go on.
Perfect. Well, this is the Hook Island sea monster.
Jesus fucking Christ.
The first and only sighting of the Hook Island sea monster was in 1964 by some dude named Robert Le Sirec.
A Frenchman.
You know, and he saw this while he was on vacation with his family out on a boat in the water surrounding Hook Island. So, as you can see, Hook Island here is basically like next to the Whitsundays.
Mm.
Here's an excerpt of his sighting of the creature. It was only when we got within 20 feet of the serpent that we could see its head clearly. The head was large, about 4 feet from top to bottom, with jaws about 4 feet wide. The lower jaw was like that of a sandfish. The skin was smooth but rather dull, brownish black in color. The eyes seemed pale green, almost white. The skin looked more like that of a shark than an eel. There were no apparent scales. He goes on to further describe the creature as about 90 feet long. Behind the head, the body was about 2 feet 4 inches thick and remained that way for about 25 feet. Then it gradually tapered into a whip-like tail. The general color of the body was black with 1-foot-wide brownish rings every 5 feet. The first starting just behind the head. The skin was smooth but dull.
Again, which he already said.
Smooth but dull.
Smooth but dull.
Look,
this is
just
a smooth but dull creature.
So you don't forget. Smooth, dull.
Exactly. Now, he managed to take a photo of the creature.
That's a photo of it? I thought that was a painting or something.
This is a photo, which you can see here. So have a look at this image and tell me what you're looking at.
It is a 90-foot-long sperm under the water is what it looks like. It's a shadow under the water of a creature, I suppose, with a big head and then a long tail.
Mm-hmm.
Like cum.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So now, looking at this image, which you already thought was a painting, you might be thinking that this looks fucking fake.
Yeah, it's fucking fake.
Yeah. And you're probably right. It's a weird photo, and also given that there haven't been any other sightings, it seems like Robert just made up some shit so that his vacation was a bit more interesting than like, oh, I got sunburnt on a boat.
Yeah, because like, so it's a black and white photo, and there's like a boat in the background, and And the water, it's a black and white photo of water, and a lot of the water is darker in the shape I've described. But it looks like a book cover, you know? Like, it looks like it looks fake. How'd you get that good a photo but nothing else?
Right?
And what is the photo taken from? Like, where are you standing?
Where are you standing that you're that close?
What's the vantage point
How
here?
Is the definition of it? Like, why is it?
And who is the guy over there?
Yeah, doesn't he have a photo? I know it's the 60s, but, like, how'd you get this photo and nothing else?
Like, did he have a conversation with this other man?
Yeah, did that guy come? Is this that guy's come?
Yeah, he did one big one.
He did one big one that's this entire lifetime's worth of semen coming out at once.
He's releasing the eldritch evil inside him.
Yeah. Finally. Jesus Christ.
This was a sex demon he was possessed by. And,
this is the sex demon.
He's now exorcised it. It's lucky that you guys didn't run into the sex demon earlier. That would have been pretty scary at Queen Street.
Hook Island Seamster.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
We're really getting it now.
But yeah, so like, there are some people around Hook Island who'll, like, tell the story and stuff, but it's not like anybody's out there being like, oh, yeah, I saw it last week or something.
No, okay. And is this something that has, like, a indigenous...
No.
Okay.
This is probably schizophrenia.
This is Robert. This is Robert doing Robert shit.
This is a French person.
This is French shit.
Like Robert.
Fucking... Okay. Okay.
We shall move on, because there are a lot of sightings in the ocean, apparently.
Of wet guys.
Of wet guys. And the next one is the Moha Moha, or as would be more appropriate for the Australian accent, Kieran?
Mawa Mawa.
Mawa Mawa.
Yeah. So, you know, keeping with the theme of there's something in the water, the Moha Moha is a 30 feet long sea turtle with a fish tail, supposedly sighted on a beach on Great Sandy Island by school teacher Selena Lovell and a small group of accompanying people on June 8th, 1890.
Great Sandy Island, isn't that now Gari?
Or I think it might be, actually.
Was it one of the islands that... No, yeah, it's Great Sandy Island, not Gari.
Great Sandy Island, yeah, that is Gari, yeah.
Right. Okay, so on Great Sandy... So the school teachers on Great Sandy Island, which at this point is known as Fraser Island, because Eliza Fraser has had a lying story about it. Fuck. All right, and sees Pokemon.
Wonderful, wonderful Moha Moha. So it's the local indigenous name for this creature, meaning dangerous turtle.
What else would that mean?
Exactly.
Which word means dangerous and which word means
turtle? I'm not
sure,
because they're both the one word. So does repeating a word mean that it makes it dangerous?
Like a big emphasis on it. Like, this is like turtle.
Yeah, it's like, this is Karen, and this is like Karen, and he's just like waving it. He's got a crowbar.
Huge.
It's dark Kieran.
Exactly.
So keep in mind, I'm like gathering most of this information from the highly trustworthy A Book of Creatures blog online.
Wow, it's a book and a blog?
Yeah,
what will
it is.
They think of next?
Exactly. That's what makes it trustworthy, I think. So a weirdly poetic quote from said blog/book is as follows. The Moha Moha has a saurian face, that is a lizard-like face, with teeth or serrated jawbones.
Whoa.
The skin was glossy and smooth as satin. It had its mouth open and visible above the water, and no visible nostrils, leading Lovell to conclude that it breathed through its mouth. The rounded jaws were 18 inches long. Very specific, I would say. The head and neck were a greenish-white with white spots on the neck, weird sentence, and a white band around a very black eye. For some reason, just the one?
Just one real dark eye. This is a cyclops lizard.
Yeah, which I guess there was no mention of that beyond that. So some unspecified guy called Huvelmans responded to these reports thusly. And
some
this is,
guy.
There was no specification
just
of who this man was.
Yeah.
There was no even like first name. It was Huvelmans.
Huvelmans. What's
and
he say?
He said this: with all due respect to her sex, Lovell can only be an errant liar and a bad liar at that. He went on to accuse her of psychotic behavior and mythomania. You know, just having a real normal one.
Just real normal shit. Mythomania.
Yep. And, you know, that's why we have the feminist fist over there, because we gotta believe women.
Mytho-moha-moha-mania.
Yep.
Exactly. Believe women, There is a massive turtle fish thing out there.
Yep.
There's a massive turtle fish off the coast of Gari.
Yes.
Yeah, and considering that, you know, it has a local indigenous name, I'm willing to believe there is something like this out there somewhere.
Absolutely.
Well, because that's one of the hinge points, right? It's like, as opposed to the Hook Island sea monster,
yeah.
Both this and the Miriula are, like, reported in lineal history in some
exactly.
sense. Not lineal history.
If indigenous people are saying there's something like this out there, it's very possible that there is something like this out there.
And certainly more likely that there was at one point.
Exactly.
Yeah, it certainly lends more credence to
than
it.
Compared to like the Hook Island situation.
Exactly, which is just
exactly.
like some guy saw this thing one time and was like, this is real. And everyone
yeah.
else was like, oh, we've never seen this gigantic thing.
Yeah, as a Frenchman would be, he was probably just like high off his mind on cocaine and
so
just
many
hallucinated.
French legs. Frog legs, just eating frog legs.
Exactly.
So he's just been eating so many French legs.
He's just, you know, in France,
you know,
legs are a delicacy.
As a French person, he would.
Fucking contrast those guns.
Degenerates.
Degenerates.
Degenerates. Jean Gerard.
Shut up, okay. His name is spelled J-A-R-R-R-T-E-A-T. Gerat is... Now I'm saying Gerat, and I meant... I said Gerat, but now I can't not say Gerat. I'm so mad.
Well, let's cool off.
Yeah.
Let's look at another wet guy.
Yeah,
okay?
Let's look at another wet guy. The Euroa Beast.
Yes, now we're going to be talking about the Euroa Beast. Now, this excerpt here was published by the Brisbane Courier in February of 1890. Now, if you'd like to read it, you're welcome to. Otherwise, I'm happy to read it out.
I'll give it a go.
Okay.
It's a long excerpt.
It is a long excerpt, but I really liked it.
Considerable excitement has been caused in Euroa by reports as to an extraordinary animal having been seen in a swamp at Wailanembe, about 14 miles distant. The swamp is about 150 yards across, and a creek flows through it. For 6 years or more, the swamp is reputed to have been the haunt of something abnormal. Tales being told of dogs flying out of the place and never again being induced to enter. Last week, a couple of young men went into the swamp for the purpose of cutting reeds, which are 6 foot high and very thick. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Where are these reeds?
Let's go, reeds.
When they were alarmed by a sudden splashing and snorting near at hand, and the rushes waved as if allowing passage to some large animal, they quickly retired, but next day one ventured back to carry out the reeds he had cut. When he was again alarmed by strange sounds, he leaped upon a log and some 30 paces away saw a large head upreared, which he likens to that of a bulldog. It kept this position for about 10 minutes when it disappeared, the motion of the rushes giving the idea of an animal some 30 feet long. The young man was greatly scared. On a report of the occurrence appearing in the local journal, a party of Euroa sportsmen went out to the swamp, where they were joined by local residents on horseback. After beating about for more than an hour, they were about to give up the quest when a sudden rustling was heard, and two of the party saw an enormous tail as thick as a man's thigh disappearing into a large trunk of a fallen tree. A shot was fired at the animal, but its effect is a matter of conjecture.
Yeah, so essentially, from here, like, a bunch of fucking guys were just out there trying to catch the Euroa Beast.
In a swamp.
In a swamp that these two guys were like, we saw this shit out here.
We saw
and
this
now
motherfucking...
Everyone's like, oh, get our pitchforks, let's go.
30-foot tall bulldog.
Yeah.
Living in the swamp.
Real cartoon shit.
Real cartoon shit.
Exactly.
Shrek is
a party of Euroa sportsmen. It's like, oh, call the rugby team.
Yeah.
We got.
I mean, I guess
we need
like,
some big fellas.
They're like the only guys in town who have some brawn to them, I guess.
Who else?
No one.
Wow.
So the last sighting, the last known sighting was of some large footprints that kind of like went into the swamp and then disappeared. And there's been like nothing ever since.
And sorry, where's Euroa?
Euroa is
Victoria.
In Victoria.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So like
Euroa, you know,
Euroa.
Oh, it's that exact Euroa.
Exactly. Now, is the Euroa beast tied to Ned Kelly?
Is the Euroa beast Ned Kelly?
Is it Dan Kelly? Maybe.
Is it Dan Kelly? Is it Joe Byrne?
Is it Ned Kelly's armor being reanimated?
Yeah.
We really have a lot
of questions.
We really
have a lot of questions.
And we're just trying to get to the bottom.
Is it a 30-foot long bulldog that lives in a swamp?
Is it a bunch of plow moldboards?
And that brings us to our next wet guy.
Mm.
Wet guy, and also kind of a bridge into our next category of cryptids. So we have the elephant humanoid. that are sighted supposedly in New South Wales. Elephant humanoids. We will talk about what.
I am a human being.
Don't you worry, don't you worry. So the elephant humanoid, or creatures of this like species, I guess, were allegedly spotted at Narrabeen Lake in New South Wales. However, there is a lot of a deeper history to the elephant humanoid somehow, for some reason. So some propose a boring explanation, like a continuity of the prehistoric Palarchetes, an extinct terrestrial herbivorous marsupial with a quote-unquote trunk-like nose, but honestly no resemblance to elephants or humanoids, as you can
see.
They're great.
They kind of look like tapirs.
Yeah.
Like tapirs that are a bit maybe smaller.
There's also something of a sloth-ish vibe.
There's also something of a schlong hanging off the other one's belly button. Look at that. Look at that big old pouch.
That is a pouch, yeah.
Oh. That is a baby.
Why are you sexualizing a marsupial's pouch,
Yanni? How could you do this?
I'm so sorry. All right, yeah, sloth marsupial. I like it. I like him.
Yeah. So this is one proposition. It's a boring one. Let's be honest. It's boring.
And it's not real.
And it's not real.
Because the real one is.
The real one is. Not the next one, but the next one is. Another theory is that it is an elephantine djinn. Like those depicted in Zakaria ibn Muhammad al-Kawzini's Marvels of Things Created and Miraculous Aspects of Things Existing.
So what we've got is MMA Ganesh.
Yes. Yet another theory is that these elephant humanoids are aliens, as depicted artistically by psychic and channeler Ginny Blankenship right here. And another hypothesis poses that it's actually just Ganesh. In Australia, as it were.
Who's posing that? Indians?
I don't think
Australians?
So.
Australians? They're like, it's Ganesh from the Indians.
Yeah, in Australia.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this must be a Ganesh like they have in India.
Yeah.
Right. I remember one time I was talking to a guy. Shout out. No, I don't need to shout him out.
No.
And I was like, he was making fun of, you know, my language or whatever. And I'm like.
Is this a white man?
Obviously, he played like a rugby player, semi-professional rugby player.
Standard.
Who was also my boss in an office.
Okay.
Real dead shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, don't you talk shit about like my gods. You can't even name one of my gods. And he's like, Baba Ganoush.
Baba Ganoush?
That's what he said. Well, he didn't say that. He said Baba Ganoush.
Yeah.
You know he didn't say Baba Ganoush.
Baba Ganoush, you know, the god in, you know, the Hindu pantheon,
yeah,
as it
Baba
were.
Hanush.
Baba Hanush.
Yeah, right. So Ganesh
so
is living up in the northern rivers.
Yep. We got djinns, aliens, Ganesh.
The elephant djinn looks great. The alien
is demonic.
Where are you finding all this DeviantArt ass shit? And that's like
cryptid
the classic
wiki.
Picture of Ganesh.
Cryptid wiki. So, a recount of a guy supposedly seeing one of these elephant humanoids was really amusing to me. Again, this is you asked the question of where. It's cryptid wiki.
Mm.
It's the very reputable cryptid wiki. So, quote, in retrospect, McGann, they're talking about a guy. McGann speculated that what he perceived to be elephant features might have been spacesuits. A concept that would have been virtually incomprehensible in 1927.
1927 spacesuit.
Used to protect what he believed may well have been aliens.
Aliens.
A quote from our beloved cryptid wiki also goes, a race of alien humanoid elephants was described by Ray Cosulandish, a French man, of course.
Huh, a lot of French people in the story.
A lot of French people just having schizophrenia all over the story. A French man who claimed to have met about 34 extraterrestrials of different species.
34?
Extraterrestrials.
Of different species?
Of different species,
like, yeah. This is a different kind of alien.
Yeah.
And he says he's maybe seen this guy.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Wait, so like fully half of these are French?
What do you mean fully
of
half?
Of the wet guys.
I mean, there's a lot of, like, French wet guy connection, yes.
French? The French are wet guys.
Mm. Yeah, fucking frogs. Go God hop dear. Away, cunts.
Mm-hmm.
But this elephant humanoid, as it were.
Yes.
Does lead us into our next category.
Humanoids.
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 All right, so let's talk about the Yowie.
Let's.
The Yowie is a small chocolate confectionery typically eaten by children. It's hollow on the inside and contains a small, buildable toy within a plastic egg. The outside is covered in colourful foil depicting a... Oh, right, it depicts an actual yaoi. Right, right, okay. Winkin, Jugabina, Gindaring, Jurawara, Ngawin, Putikan, Dulaga, Gulaga, Ulagal. These are just a few names given to the creature that we know as the yaoi. Arguably one of the top-tier Australian cryptids, the yaoi is as a part of the fabric of this country as cricket, beer, and racism. But hold that thought in particular.
The racism one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I need you to hold on to that for a moment.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome. The yaoi is Australia's Bigfoot or Sasquatch, a giant hairy humanoid or ape that lives in the bush and is said to be anywhere from 6 to 12 feet tall. Write that down. That'll be important for basketball.
I am drafting a basketball team, so I've definitely noted down 6 to 12 feet.
Yep, good. Some yaoi are described as shy and reclusive, while others are aggressive and dangerous. So there's kind of like a spectrum. The term yaoi comes from the Kamilaroi people of New South Wales. Another contemporary term used was yahoo. Yahoos were said to be a race of peoples who inhabited the land alongside Indigenous Australians during the Dreamtime. So the first documented sighting from Europeans was in 1795, and this continued pretty regularly from then. And I should note here, this is where you can put that racism thought back down, that most European colonisers were pretty fucking racist. And there was a through line of hearing these stories from Indigenous Australians and being like, oh, there's a wild hairy man in the bush, huh? Yeah, side eye. I reckon there might be.
Right. It's like, oh, you mean you.
Yeah,
right.
Pretty much.
I see. Okay.
It's like, it's basically, they're implying that the call is coming from inside the house.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Over time, this did change as the white man encountered the yaoi. And they were like, oh, shit, that's not a human. But don't worry, there is still racism.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm sure you were really worried.
I wouldn't feel comfortable in this country if there wasn't.
Exactly.
There it wouldn't still be this country.
But yeah, there's still plenty of racism in the yaoi story, especially from like
in the yaoi community.
Western. The yaoi community is rife with racism, especially coming from the Westerners.
The Western yaoi's are like, well, actually, what happened during the yaoi civil war is that the Western yaoi's subjugated the Eastern yaoi's.
Yeah,
even though they were a smaller part of the population, they were the 10-foot tall ones, and the Eastern yaoi's are 2 feet tall, so they really didn't have a chance.
It was a massacre.
The Western yaoi's are the violent ones, the Eastern yaoi's are the peaceful ones. It was a whole problem.
So I have here for you to read an excerpt from the yaoi Wikipedia page about a I guess a sighting of a yaoi.
Give me this.
From a man in Canberra in 2010.
In Canberra?
Yes.
Yeah. Home sweet home? Oh.
Oh no.
This is terrible. This is so fucking horrible.
This is one of the worst things I've read. 2010?
Yeah, this is 2010.
A Canberra man said he saw a juvenile covered in hair with long arms trying to steal his car in his garage. A friend later told him it could be an Aboriginal person.
Yeah, so the...
Arrest this man.
Yeah.
Like Gordon Ramsay.
Yes. But speaking of Canberra, Tim the Yaoi Man is a born and bred Canberran who describes himself as a crypto-naturalist. He claims that in 1994 he saw a yaoi while hiking in the Brindabella Ranges. And he kind of gained popularity as Australia's foremost urban legend spooky stuff guy during my childhood. And he'd frequently be on the radio, TV, and in newspapers talking about all things Australian folklore. Yanni, do you remember Tim the Yaoi Man?
I remember Tim the Yaoi Man. I didn't realise he was Canberran.
Yeah, he's Canberran.
I thought he
lives in Canberra.
Yeah, right. But I do remember, like, the occasional segment and, like, you know, he'd... Whenever the news would have, like, a kind of... like human interest story about like this town thinks they've got a cryptid. Like he'd be called for expert comment, I guess.
Exactly. Yes. I should also mention that Tim was sued by Cadbury for calling himself the Yaoi Man because of the whole Yaoi chocolates thing.
Shut.
This is a joke country.
It's a fucking. Can the Gadigal people sue Cadbury?
You know, the case was
or
dismissed. Kamilaroi? Obviously.
Fucking.
Because you can't like call a snack like the Mothman. And then get pissed at some guy calling himself Mothman's boyfriend. Because you know that's not the snack he's talking about. And fun fact about Yaoi reports is that most come from around the New South Wales-Queensland border area. So out of everywhere we could be in Australia, right now we're in a pretty good spot to have a chance at spotting a yaoi. So, like, good for us.
Hell yeah. Let's go looking for one.
Let's go have a little looky.
Yeah, maybe we should. So, obviously... The yaoi is like a big guy, right? It's like a big Bigfoot, right?
Yes.
But we have a little Bigfoot, or a little foot, as it were.
Bigfoot, Littlefoot, Bigfoot.
Get out the way. I'm a Zanafandanafandante. Sorry.
So, the Djunjiri. The Djunjiri is a type of Australian Bigfoot, or, you know, Littlefoot, I guess.
Just they, like a footed creature.
A footed creature. It has feet, allegedly.
Oh, shit, this guy's got feet.
Fuck. What are we going to do? Ew.
Oh, my God. What? Listen, I
don't
want to
listen. I actually don't want
to listen. Something unprecedented.
They're allegedly hairy humanoid creatures, 2 to 3 feet tall, with black fur, large white fangs, and red eyes. They live in groups in caves or natural hollows of boulders. They're generally thought of as harmless, though can be aggressive, which is short people.
Hey.
Djunjiris eat shellfish and honey, which is, for some reason, like, very bougie diet,
prawns,
I think.
Prawns and honey.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like a Greek diet.
And have a sort of chirping language, so there's, like, some really advanced lore about them.
A chirping language.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, that's like, we have their diet. We don't usually have their diet other than, like, they eat humans.
Exactly. But like, here we have, like, an advanced diet, which implies that they go fishing for shellfish and they know how to cultivate honey.
I mean,
and they have
just, like,
a language.
Fucking attacking. Like, bears eat honey.
And they have a language.
Yeah, and it's chirpy.
Yeah. It's like kushtili. So I found a couple interesting things on the Cryptid Wiki, our favorite, our one and only.
A real source.
Love Cryptid Wiki.
Love it, love it. So there's apparently an unspecified indigenous tribe in the Northern Territory with a camp near a rumored Djunjiri dwelling. They believe that this humanoid nocturnal creature to protect them from other evil spirits that mean them harm, such as the bush curlews, which I believe the bush, like, bush curlews mean harm. I definitely believe they mean harm.
I voted bush curlew for Bird of the Year this year.
Because they mean harm.
Yeah. I did, sir.
I respect them. I respect them.
Awesome. Which, if not for the Djunjiri, would steal their babies, apparently.
Jesus.
The tribe moved nearer to the Djunjiri's dwelling after losing a lot of babies and have not lost one since, allegedly. For this reason, the location is kept secret and protected, which is very convenient, I think.
Yeah, this, like, that's the thing. This story sounds exactly the same if it's true or false.
Exactly.
It just sounds false.
Exactly. There's, like, a lot of spelling mistakes in this wiki.
Right.
And a lot of and a lot of I usage. Like, this editor was using this wiki as, like, a diary.
Yeah.
The last sentence on the wiki goes, like, some young Aboriginal men spotted a Djunjiri jump onto a moving ute and take some bara. This was caught on video, and in the audio, you hear them call it by name, as they had seen one before. This can be found on YouTube.
Stuart, get off there.
Yeah, very convincing evidence.
Yeah, they knew its name.
Exactly, exactly. And, you
Hell
know,
yeah.
It can be viewed on YouTube.
And that picture there, what do we got?
It just looks like, it honestly looks like a dog.
Yeah, right. So that's an alleged picture.
Allegedly,
security
yes.
Security camera
it,
footage of
But it also just looks like a Maltese.
Yeah. Like a dog standing on its hind
exactly.
legs, like against a tree.
Exactly.
It's hard to really see anything other than a little Maltese dog there.
Exactly, exactly.
If
Adorable.
It's a dog.
So we have a little guy coming up that Kieran very much adores.
I'm so excited for this little guy.
Oh my God,
so I'm
going
to pass it over to Kieran to talk
about
potentially his favorite.
Yes.
Besides the thylacine, of course.
Exactly. So imagine for me, if you will, Yanni, a frog.
Right.
Now imagine the frog is red.
Okay, that's a thing.
Yep. Now imagine he is also a small anthropomorphic guy, like 2 to 3 feet tall.
Okay, I can conceive of that.
Yeah, imagine he lives in fig trees.
What? Okay, sure, he eats figs.
Yep.
Wait,
yep.
He lives in the tree?
Yeah, he
he's
lives
like
in the fig tree.
Tall.
Like, he kind of like hangs out in the fig tree.
And he's a 2-foot-tall red frog?
Yes.
That's a guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and he's also a vampire.
Oh. He doesn't eat figs?
No, he does not.
This is gonna blow your socks off.
Oh my God.
This is Yaramayahu. A monster from indigenous folklore. He was often told to children, as like most scary stories are, to get them to behave. Now this is an artist's interpretation of Yaramayahu on your left.
Yanni is not taking this well.
What is that? What is that?
It's a Yaramayahu.
Which one are the eyes? Is that the ears?
Yes.
Its eyes are all the way up the front.
Yes.
There.
Yes. It's a Yarama-Yarama.
You know, he is a red frog small guy.
Clifford the big red frog vampire. Small guy.
Vampire. He was a vampire. Yes.
Australia-wide distribution bar Tasmania.
Yeah. He could be anywhere, but I guess he can't cross the water.
Oh, yeah. He can't swim.
You know?
No, I can't imagine he could. He lives in fig trees.
So here's some more about him because I actually cannot get enough. Yarama-Yahu is said to drop from fig trees onto unsuspecting victims to suck their blood, right? So you go under a fig tree, he drops down.
You don't see him up there.
You don't see him up there.
No.
Because you're unsuspecting, you see. And he drops down and he starts sucking your blood, right? But
yeah,
after drinking your blood, Yarama-Yahu will then ingest your whole body and take a nap.
Why does he drink the blood then?
When he's ready.
Oh.
He will vomit you back up and go on his way. You, however, having been fed from, will now be shorter and be a little bit redder in color than you were before.
What?
But also, you will be alive.
Yeah, you will be alive. You'll just be shorter and kind of redder. Now, this is important, okay? Because this is like survival knowledge, okay? Should you be attacked again?
Yeah. Oh.
You will grow shorter and redder still.
Oh.
And ultimately, if this process continues, you too will turn into a Yarama-Yahu.
It all does make sense.
Exactly. Once, because you know.
Yeah,
real.
Once you go to the part that it's like, oh, it's turning you into a Yarama-Yahu. Because I was like, oh, that seems like, certainly I don't want to be shorter and redder, but that seems okay.
Like, you're alive, exactly.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty good outcome for being consumed. It's like, Jonah's probably happy with that.
So he only attacks in the daytime.
What?
As vampires do,
you know.
Famous.
And he will seek to attack anyone who sees him. So he doesn't like being seen, so he will drink your blood and swallow you whole and then throw you up later.
It's like Medusa.
And you'll be a bit shorter and redder.
If you look at Medusa, you turn into stone. If you look at the Yarama-Yahu, it will suck your blood and turn you smaller and redder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a... I really have a lot of, like... There's a tremendous amount of honor. I have a lot of respect. I think there's a lot of dignity to this life, like to concealing oneself from the world and from the evils of the world in like a fig tree, which like I don't think are very thick.
They're not particularly big.
And you're a big, like 2 foot tall red thing and you're hiding in this tree and making sure if someone sees you, you're protecting your image. Like intellectual property law could learn a lot from the Yarama-Yahu. He's incredible. He's incredible.
Exactly.
And so if you keep going under fig trees during the day and not looking up at them, after this has happened to you once, if you keep doing it over and over again, eventually you'll turn into a Yarama-Yahu.
Yeah, basically, like, if he keeps getting you, like, you know, hey, it happens once, shit happens.
No,
if you're not aware enough of your surroundings, which seems to be kind of like the fable
that's
in this,
the lesson,
right?
Here. Yeah, yeah,
is,
yeah.
If you keep, like, fucking around and not paying attention to where you are, he's going to get you again, and you'll have more physical consequences. And basically, if this happens enough times, it's kind of unspecified. Perhaps it, like, is specified based on, like, whoever's telling the story. Like, you know, maybe it's, yeah, like, you know, the idea is, like, you get away with it once. Like, there are some consequences, but you do continue to be human.
Oh, so it's like a bee.
But if it kind of keeps happening again, like, yeah, you are going to turn into a Yarama-Yahu.
You're like a third of the way there, and your family's like, listen, we don't want to hang out with you like this. Just go full Yarama-Yahu.
You know, we can't keep doing this shit.
Looking like the Animorphs cover.
So some modern theories as to the origins of the Yarama-Yahu legend mainly involve other proven to have existed animals. For example, there's some speculation around Thylacoleo, as we discussed before, the marsupial lion, as it was known to attack from trees. And another is the Tarsier, this guy, a small primate brought by Malay settlers.
Why is he posing like that?
Because that's the best photo I found of him.
He's got like jazz hands going. This is a little primate. And then he's doing jazz hands, being like, hey, it's me.
He's got, like, the freakiest long fingers ever as well.
He's salad fingers ass.
Oh, yeah, salad fingers ass, absolutely.
Yeah, this is my favorite guy. I feel so blessed
and
to have
real.
Learned about him.
Yeah, and he's real.
The
monkey.
Tarsier?
Yeah, he's delightful.
The Tarsier is absolutely real.
I love the Tarsier.
I'm saying the Yarama-Yahu is my favorite. Like,
oh,
I
yes.
love the Yarama-Yahu.
No, I'm stunned by the Yarama-Yahu. The picture of the Yarama-Yahu. So, like, it looks like a child trying to draw something because the eyes are
like all the way up the front of where the mouth is. Like, so like a imagine if a crocodile's eyes were like where its nose is.
Like instead of nostrils,
yeah,
the eyes
yeah,
were there.
Exactly.
But then the nostrils were also there.
Yeah, the nostrils are also there. And then the mouth goes a bunch. Yeah, no, I love. Folks,
gorgeous.
If you haven't been watching the YouTube version, and I know none of you have, they literally have no views. But you got to see the Yarramayahu.
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's
yeah,
spectacular.
I adore,
it's
no,
sensational.
I adore.
It's cunt.
And, like, it's like.
It is so cunt.
At the end of the day, it's like, yeah, motherfuckers keep walking under my fig tree. It's like obvious. Like, I only attack during the day. Like, at night, you can't see me. So
yeah.
I'm not attacking you.
Yeah, it's like that. So, is
and that
problem.
It also implies that it's sleeping during the night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's awake during the day in a tree, being bright red, and you're
very
walking
visible.
Under it. You deserved it. You aren't paying attention. If you get eaten by a Yarramayahu, you're not paying attention. All right. Fuck yeah. I love the Yarramayahu.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
And that does feed us into our next category.
Which is First Nations folklore.
Hell yeah.
And to start us off, we have the Bunyip.
Mm.
Probably, you know, one of the most well-known Australian cryptids, as it were.
I played for a cricket team called the Bunyips for a while.
See, so much lore. So much lore. It comes from indigenous mythology and is said to inhabit swamps, billabongs, creeks, riverbeds, and waterholes. There are a couple of phenotypic descriptions of bunyips that prevail, and I'll tell you my standing theory apropos of it, but first let's just, like, relay them.
Mm.
So Wikipedia says that 60% of bunyip sightings resemble seals or swimming dogs, and 20% of sightings are of long-necked creatures with small heads. The remaining descriptions are ambiguous beyond categorization.
Mm.
So the seal dog variety is often described as being between 4 and 6 feet long with a shaggy black or brown coat. According to reports, these bunyips have round heads resembling a bulldog, prominent ears, no tail, and whiskers like a seal or otter. The long-necked variety is allegedly between 5 and 15 meters long and is said to have black or brown fur, large ears, small tusks, a head like a horse or emu, and elongated maned neck about 3 feet long with many folds of skin and a horse-like tail. Now, I'm a scientist by education and profession, and my standing theory is that what we're seeing here is sexual dimorphism, right?
Oh.
Yep, yep. These are not two distinct creatures or two extremely divergent and schizophrenic descriptions of one thing.
It's the male and female.
It's the same creature, just male and female variants of it.
Right. I think that makes a lot of sense. So
exactly.
Do you have a theory about which is which, or just that's what you'd want to find out next?
I think the jury's still out on that one. I think we gotta like look into it. Now, Kieran, so you have something of a personal
he's got bunyips in his family.
A personal trauma.
Yes.
Regarding a certain thing about bunyips. Please tell us.
Yes. So it would have been decades ago, probably like more than 20 years ago, we were at a wedding for a family member that was out on this random property, right? And there was a, like, lake, not a lake, there was a river creek thing running behind the venue, behind the church.
Mm-hmm.
And my little sibling was, like, really young, like, maybe, like, would have been under 6 years old and wasn't part of the wedding party. So I was off with the wedding party because, like, not to brag or anything, I was a flower girl. And so I was off doing photos and shit, right?
Yep.
And my sibling was out, like, just wandering around being a child, being like, I'm bored, and just, like, going about. And so went down to this, like, creek thing and says that they saw a creature in the water that rose up out of the water onto the bank to, like, have a look.
Mm-hmm.
And basically says that I remember, like, looking at this creature that was kind of, like, swamp-coated. Like, it sort of had, like, almost like it was all, like, composed of nature as well, but was also kind of like a dog.
Kind of like mossy.
Right.
Yes, you know?
A mossy dog.
Yeah. And, like, was kind of, like, looking at it as a kid does, being like, oh, what animal is that? And it was looking at my sibling, being like, just making eye contact, just kind of looking. Just like real creepy style, I guess. And then my dad called out, and when my sibling looked back, the creature was gone. Which is pretty cool.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah. And so
I mean, overactive childhood imagination, maybe. That would be Bunyip.
The seal type Bunyip, as opposed to the long-necked type.
Which I kind of think that's probably the male of the species because men are dogs.
Yeah.
And women have long necks.
Women have long necks.
Sexy long necks.
Long, elegant necks.
That's true. And the second thing to comment on is if anybody listening has watched the film, the animated film, Dot and the Kangaroo, you know exactly what I'm talking about when I tell you about the Bunyip scene in that film being probably the most horrifying thing I remember being a child. It actually scared me so much.
You've shown me this. It's spooky.
You showed me this as well.
That I got so scared of, like, the bush. And when I watched as a kid, this was a time where I would still go to my dad's hometown and we would go out for bushwalks and we would go into nature and we'd go to, like, creeks and do fishing and, like, find, like, deer tracks and, like, go on, like, really cool hikes and stuff. And I loved being out in nature. But after seeing that, I was so fucking scared constantly that there would be a bunyip just, like, waiting for me somewhere. And I would always be looking around in nature and looking at the trees and being like, fuck, it could be anywhere. What do I do? How do I escape? And I just remember this, like, deep sense of dread. And it was probably, like, the first time I experienced, like, existential dread, which was, like, crazy to go through.
Right.
But we all have to, you know?
It's a part of growing up, isn't it?
It's a part of growing up.
And, I guess that's testament to what you were saying earlier about the bunyip being probably one of the most Australian, like, mythosy creatures.
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. So, like, bunyip slaps. Love that shit. Mm. Believe in it fully.
Mm.
Hell yeah. Also, here's a little callback. So Ned Kelly, at his last stand at Glen Rowan, was actually, in reports, mistaken for a ghost or a bunyip of some sort. And, you know, we had the Euroa Beast earlier, so, you know, Ned Kelly, supernatural confirmed.
There's more supernatural connotations to Ned Kelly than I thought there were.
Exactly.
Given there's
two. We might be onto something here.
Man, Ked Kelly.
Ked Kelly, yeah.
The unkillable Ked Kelly.
You know, he couldn't read, but he was a supernatural creature. And his dad was in jail.
His dad was in jail.
Ked Kelly, guy named, couldn't read, Bunyip.
All right, so this next one isn't exactly a cryptid. But I did want to mention it anyway. They are eligible to be on your team, just so you know.
Okay.
This is the Min Min Lights.
Oh, I've actually heard of the Min Min Lights. Have you seen
the Min Min Lights, Yanni?
No, I try not to, but it's just because I have that thing where I'll sneeze if I see them.
Yeah, I really relate to that, honestly.
God, they could be here right now. All right, so the Min Min Lights, they are a phenomenon seen in outback Australia, with most reports coming from an area known as Channel Country, which is basically a section of land covering parts of Queensland, New South Wales, South Australia, and the Northern Territory. You know, where they all kind of meet as a square.
Yeah.
Basically that section of land.
Yeah.
And that being said, they are also seen, like, elsewhere, but that's where the most common sightings are reported. The lights are described in a variety of ways, but mostly it's agreed that they appear as sudden balls of light, usually white, but sometimes displaying a variety of colours. Indigenous folklore says the lights are spirits, sometimes elders taking care of country, and other times mischievous or bad spirits intending to harm those who view them. The lights have been seen prior to European colonisation, and have continued since, with the first suspected chronicling in Western culture of the lights in 1838.
Mm.
So they seem super weird and mysterious, and some people are, like, drawn to them, others are repulsed by them, and sometimes the lights will follow you. And that's, like, really, really spooky. Like, there are some people being like, yeah, I saw the lights, and all of a sudden I'd just been walking towards them for 20 minutes.
It's like, or, an anglerfish.
Mm,
yeah, or, like,
they're entrancing.
I was driving my ute and I saw the lights and the lights started following me.
Mm.
There are possible scientific explanations for the lights, which could be like swarms of bioluminescent bugs or marsh gas or Fata Morgana, which is a phenomenon where the differences in atmospheric temperature cause mirages on horizon lines.
Fata Morgana?
I think it's like Fata, maybe Morgana.
Fata. It's Fata.
F-A-T-A.
Fata.
Oh, not Farta.
No, why would it be that?
The Farting Morgan phenomenon, which is where when a guy farts near the horizon, you just see it light up.
All right. And his name is Morgan.
And his name is Morgan.
Say the name of it again.
Fata Morgana.
Now say it if it was what I said.
Fata Morgana.
You see? It sounds the same.
I guess it does. Anyway, so the reason they're called the Min Min Lights is because it might be to do with, like, a town where they were, like, chronicled having been seen, and then that's the name that got picked up. Like, there's not really, like, a this is why they're called the Min Min Lights.
Yeah.
But the town of Min Min was just like, yes, the Min Min Lights, they're ours. Yeah, we have the Min Min Lights.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they have a whole thing where they're like, yeah, come to Min Min and you can see the Min Min Lights. And that's a big part of their tourism, similar to, like, Ninup with the Ninup
type. Yeah.
Mm.
The thylacine.
Exactly. But nobody knows what they are. And, like,
maybe we can find out. Maybe we can work it out.
I would love to see the Min Min Lights.
We
That'd
have such a good road trip to go on to see all these things.
Absolutely. We gotta organize it. Instead of going to Christmas with family, we're gonna ditch that and we're gonna go on a road trip to see all of these cryptids.
Yes.
Find all the Australian cryptids.
Exactly that.
And we will.
But let's round it out with our final topic.
Ooh.
Our final category.
Ooh, new category.
Yes. All right, are you ready? This is some bullshit.
Yep.
And we're going to start out with Crooked Mick.
What?
So I know this fella, right? Out Spearway. His name's Crooked Mick. He was a big bloke. He could down a keg of beer in 2 minutes flat. And he could shear a sheep bald with his eyes shut and one hand tied behind his back. He got his name by accident. He'd been working out in Spearwa when he came across a big croc. Biggest ever seen. Now, Mick wasn't a coward, right? He'd wrestled a few of these big bastards before. He sneaks up behind it, real quiet, and yanks on its tail as hard as he can. Now, the croc didn't like that one bit, and it spun around and bit Mick right on his nose. Bent his nose all out of shape. Now, in a rage, Mick kicked the animal sky high, so hard that if you look at the moon on a clear night, you can see the crater from where it landed. Now, the fellas back in Spearwa started making fun of how Crooked Mick's nose looked now, which is, you know, fair enough. It was all fucked up. Poor Mick. He's not a coward, but he was pretty thin-skinned. He died of embarrassment right there in the pub. And that's the story of Crooked Mick. Okay, that's not the real story of Crooked Mick. Let me tell you the real story of Crooked Mick. So you know about Paul Bunyan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, big North American that was basically like a folksy super soldier.
He's like Superman hermit.
Exactly.
Protects the land.
Essentially, Crooked Mick is his Australian counterpart.
Mm.
And Spearwa, which is Speewah, as you can see, Crooked Mick of the Spearwa, it's a storied fake town, basically. Out in the middle of nowhere where all sorts of unbelievable things go.
Oh, so it may as well be like whoop whoop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crooked Mick is a feature of these stories, with some stories saying that he could shear an impossible amount of sheep in record time. He could, as you can see on this cover, bake a pie so light it would blow away on the wind.
Huh.
And that one time, he kicked a crocodile into the moon.
Yeah, and then his friends made fun of him, and it's like, do you have no self-preservation?
Yeah, exactly. He kicked the crocodile into space.
Yeah, and it's like, you dickhead, your nose looks dumb.
Exactly. Another fun part of the lore is how he got the name Crooked Mick. And usually it's like a physical ailment.
Yeah, the nose or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Mostly, like, people will really go hard on it. They'll be like, yeah, his leg's all fucked up. Or like, oh, he's got a disease, and so he walks crooked. Sometimes it's like, oh, he's just like a seedy guy, so we call him Crooked Mick. Kind of up to the interpretation of whoever's telling the story, right?
Mm.
And what's also up to interpretation from whoever's telling the story, up to their judgment, is how Mick dies. So Mick dies in the story. And a big part of the story is saying how he dies and then being like, well, actually, that's not right. This is the real story of how Mick dies.
Fucking.
And then you go in and tell the story again. And you can, ad nauseum if you choose to.
Forever and ever.
Okay, well, that's not actually what happened. Let me tell you the real story.
You mean like you just
about
did.
What happened to Crooked Mick.
I just got Crooked Mick.
You just got Crooked Mick. Exactly. Crooked
Mick. Oh, my God. That feels ingenious. That's
beautiful, right?
That's so charming. I'm so mad.
Ha! You've been charmed, idiot.
I've been totally charmed by this bullshit piece of Australian, like, Aussie...
It's been happening to you a lot today.
Yeah, I've been hoodwinked.
You've been absolutely winked in your hood.
Damn. Yep.
And I really liked this. Like, that's the thing. When I read about it, I was like, I am also charmed by Crooked Mick and the story of Crooked Mick. That's
I wish
so
someone had done that
good.
To me when I was a kid.
Right?
Like
you want to be Crooked Mick'd.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, like, you learn something about how stories aren't real.
Yeah.
You know, you actually learn... Oh, my God. Okay, hell yeah, Crooked Mick.
Yeah, and also about pattern recognition.
that as well. Mm-hmm. There seems to be real functions to Crooked Mick of the Speewo. Of course, we wouldn't hold on to this, but we would hold on to having two different Rugbys.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. You know, but I love Crooked Mick, and so I wanted to include him in.
Yeah, I love Crooked Mick.
All right, now this is something very important to Elle.
Yes. Oh my God, I love this one so much. This next one is my absolute favorite on this list. When I found out about this, I was like, this is my one true love. I will never love another thing more than this. So it is the Tasmanian Mock Walrus.
He's so small.
The Tasmanian Mock Walrus.
He's now, tiny.
This guy is unfortunately a complete hoax, but oh boy, do I wish he wasn't, because that is the love of my life.
He's so small.
So what I'm going to do is like read the entire two paragraphs off of the Museum of Hoaxes page on the Mock Walrus, and then we're going to take a little gander at the newspaper clippings made specifically for this hoax. Quote, "The Orlando Sentinel ran a story about a creature known as the Tasmanian Mock Walrus, or TMW for short, that it said it made a perfect pet. The creature was only 4 inches long, resembled a walrus, purred like a cat, and had the temperament of a hamster. What made it such an ideal pet was that it never had to be bathed, used the litter box, and ate cockroaches. In fact, a single TMW could entirely rid a house of its cockroach problem."
So you have a little, like a walrus cockroach catcher.
Yes.
Right.
"Reportedly, some TMWs had been smuggled in from Tasmania, and there were efforts being made to breed them. But the local pest control industry, sensing that the TMW posed a threat to its business, was pressuring the government not to allow them in the country."
Yeah, being like, don't let them in. You're going to, like, we are out here killing all these rats and cockroaches. If people have the Tasmanian Mock Walrus, then they won't need our services.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
An accompanying photo showed protesters picketing outside the offices of the Orlando City government to call attention to the plight of the TMW. Dozens of people called the paper trying to find out where they could obtain their own TMW. What we have here on the screen are some of the aforementioned newspaper clippings.
Yeah, like, so...
Please read some of these. Please read some of these, because they are wonderful and absolutely just beautiful.
This is from the newspaper Florida. "Small wonder. This little fella can make life in Florida much easier for all of us. But the bureaucrats won't let him."
Exactly.
By Dean Johnson. There's a picture of a walrus being held in someone's hand. Looks kind of like a naked mole rat. I do notice that the dateline obviously is April 1, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
You did preface that it was a fake thing, but it's an April Fool's joke. And he's adorable. He's a little walrus.
He's absolutely just wonderful.
Runs around your house and catches cockroaches.
Which is like the ideal thing you need in life, I think.
They describe him as homely, but quite lovable, resembling in temperament a hamster or a tame white rat.
Exactly. So purrs like a cat.
Yeah.
You know, and here we have photos of some protesters. "Freedom to breed," one says. "Save the Tasmanian Mock Walrus."
Oh. Free the walrus.
We also have the walrus. "Down with red tape and up with TMW.
Yep.
Up with TMW.
This is the love of my life, and I love him so much. And I wish he was real, and it's the only thing that could possibly bring me joy in life, but... alas.
I'm sorry he's not, but I'm glad to have learned about him.
Exactly. Me too.
And you are correct that the photo here is just of a naked mole rat.
Yeah, right. What is that? That freaky thing. Yes, that's right. It's the naked mole rat.
Yep.
And this takes us on to our last entry for you. Our last contestant.
Drop bears and carnivorous kangaroos.
That is correct. Yes.
Yes.
Drop bears and carnivorous kangaroos.
I know now, these ones.
Exactly. I didn't write anything because we can just talk about this. Drop bears obviously are a terrifying creature.
As the token like an immigrant non-Australian here, I guess.
Of course. So you know about koalas, right? Obviously, they're quite cute. They're kind of like lazy.
Yes,
you know, they're
in trees
around here. Pretty cool.
Quite now, slothful beings, full of sin.
Exactly. Now there is an even more sinful version of the koala, which you do need to be wary of because they are quite difficult to distinguish from a regular koala.
Yeah.
Now, this is what is called a drop bear.
Yeah.
Now, drop bears, Australians are usually pretty good at telling apart a koala and a drop bear, but tourists, it's going to be a lot trickier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with drop bears is that they kind of do what their name suggests, which is they will fall on you from trees and with their very large fangs will just really savage you. Just attack the shit out of
you. So basically their sin is wrath.
Yes, absolutely. Whereas the koala has sloth, the drop bear has wrath.
Ugh.
So what you're going to need to do is when you are going out into the bush or out into nature, even just around the suburbs, if there are a lot of big trees around, you're going to have to look up.
Mm.
Keep your eyes up there. Look for any irregular movements. Sometimes I'd recommend for some tourists, like especially if you've got like kids or anything, it might just be safer to wear a helmet for your whole stay, just to be safe. Sometimes to ward off the drop bear, you can smear a bit of Vegemite behind your ear.
Right.
They really don't like the smell of it. And so it's one of those things you can do as well. It's for like, a bit of extra protection.
Yeah, it's like, would you say it's like holy water for these drop bears?
Yes, absolutely. Like garlic to a vampire almost.
Right.
Yeah. It's really going to repel them. Wonderful. They hate it. Don't use Marmite. It's not as good. It's not going to do anything.
Course.
True Vegemite is really the only way to go for kind of like a natural protection.
Thank you very much for that. I'm very indebted for this a native perspective, as it were.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Wonderful. Stay safe out there. And the other we have to talk about is the carnivorous kangaroo, which, like, there is a historical carnivorous kangaroo, which was part of our megafauna discussion that we had of old. The modern interpretation and the modern belief of the modern carnivorous kangaroo is that it's just like a kangaroo that's gone insane and just like wants to kill people and eat them up and shit. They're in horror movies. So back when I was really into cryptozoology, there was a specific website forum that I would go on to for Australian cryptozoology, right? And mostly I was just reading about the thylacine because that's what I was really into.
It's the only thing that matters.
But there was a forum entry on the carnivorous kangaroo that I found so believable. Like, I went and told my dad and he's like, you're a fucking idiot, that's fake. And I was like, no dad, this guy went to a cave and it's there, it's out there right now, and we can go and prove it too. Like, it was really cringe, and looking back on it, I really fell for it. It was like a classic creepypasta. But there's this guy talking about, like, you know, seeing this thing and going into this cave and, you know, being like, I'm gonna go back there, I'll update again. And like, people's comments underneath being like, did you go back, what did you see? And, like, you know, the guy obviously never updates. The theory being that he went back and it ate him.
And he died, yeah.
But I fully believed it as a kid. I was like, this is crazy. It's out there. The news needs to cover this. And, yeah, my dad's like, you're dumb. Dumb child. Shut up. That's fake. And I'm like, no, a man wrote about it. It has to be real.
Yeah.
It has to.
It just has to.
That's the end of our presentation.
Beautiful.
On Australian cryptids.
I loved it. This was a fantastic presentation. I've got my my draft almost ready. I'm just figuring out two more places.
Of course.
Yep.
But I've got four positions and thus also four of the categories picked.
Amazing.
And so at point guard, I am picking the Junjadi.
Oh, that was a good pick right there, Yana. That was going to be my next pick. Oh, my goodness. I was going to take it for sure.
Junjadi came from the humanoid category. The reason I'm picking the Junjadi as point guard, obviously the size works quite well, a little bit small, a bit more agile, able to handle the ball quite well. Obviously, we know that they've got pretty good vertical. They're able to jump into a moving ute.
Absolutely.
Like, that's pretty useful in a basketball context. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite taken by the Junjadi. So I'm going to be taking the Junjadi as point guard in my team. And that will also be my humanoid. Now, at shooting guard, I wanted somebody who could portray, like, multiple roles. A shooting guard, sometimes you need them to kind of be a point guard, but also be able to shoot. So I thought I would just pick the Tantanoola Tiger.
Ooh, ooh, nice. Surprise. Ooh. I gotta be surprised.
That was surprised?
Yeah, what, surprise.
Which is both a tiger and a dingo, and is thus able to fulfill multiple roles on the basketball court.
Gorgeous. Wonderful.
So I also stunning couldn't creature. Leave the Tantanoola Tiger behind.
Absolutely not. It's too beautiful.
Now, at center, I have picked one of our wet guys. Oh. And in honor of the Long Frenchman, I'm picking the Long Frenchman's Hook Island Sea Monster.
There you go. Nice pick.
That's cool. Respect right there.
Because just looking at my quotes here, it's 90 feet long. So
yeah.
That
understandable.
Seems, you know, like, that seems to be my center. For my coach. I've already picked my coach.
Yes.
It's wonderful. Crooked Mick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hell yes, Crooked Mick.
Mick has to be the coach. If we let him play, he'll die.
Yeah.
So, but we can't leave him off the team. He's so powerful. I feel like he's going to have, like, interesting strategies because of the perspective he's coming from, being from all the way out in Speewa.
Absolutely.
He's not
absolutely.
Being, like, conditioned. So that's obviously my some bullshit section, which does leave my prehistoric and First Nations folklore. And I know who I'm picking for them.
Yes.
I know who I'm picking for them. Was the Yana Ma Yahu First Nations folklore? Humanoid.
But he is kind of a crossover.
Yeah, he's a bridge.
So you could select him for First Nation folklore if you choose.
This is going to be tough. This is going to be tough. But I think at small forward, I'm going to have to pick the Bunyip. At small forward, I'm going to have to pick the Bunyip. You want your strongest hitter.
I think a stunned disbelief.
I know y'all surprised.
At small forward, able to really attack the paint, even sky for a lob, get behind the paint at some points, but also shoot from distance when needed. Sometimes handle the ball, especially against those apex wings. You're like 6'8", 6'9", Tatums and such. We've also got like a player who is able to navigate in different environmental contexts in the water and such.
Versatile
player. So I'm going to have to pick the Bunyip at small forward as well as being my First Nations folklore representative, which does leave the prehistoric section. And this was a really tough one. I have... I was really between three for a while. The Borinjor, the Mihurung Parangmal, and the Elsharana bird. Now, I then eliminated two of them really quickly right now as I realized that two of them seem definitely not to have hands. And the Borinjor might. So I'm going to pick the Borinjor at power forward because... You know, you need to be able to dribble the ball.
Gorgeous.
The Borinjor, but like, absolutely was one of my like potential picks. I was quite taken by the idea of the Mihurung Parangmal. Like, we are talking demon duck giant thunderbirds with absolutely. Purple heads. And I don't know that they wouldn't, like, on defense, sure. That's a thick beast. You're not going to be able to move it out of the lane. You're going to have to really work for everything you get. However, how will it get the rebound?
Exactly.
How is it gonna actually absorb the rock? Whereas the Borinjor, I mean, I know it's a three-toed reptile, and it's, you know, it's eating. It's got these big claws, right? It was eating all that cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it can, like, handle guarding Kevin Durant. If it can tear a cow apart. So that does mean my full team. At point guard, I have the Junja D, who is representing humanoids.
Yep.
At shooting guard, I have the Tantanula Tiger from the Big Cats. At small forward, I have the Bunyip from First Nations folklore. At power forward, I have the Borinjor from
Prehistoric,
which I've forgotten right down here. At center, I have the 90-foot-long Hook Island sea monster,
mm-hmm.
who's also French. And then coaching the team is Crooked Mick of some
absolutely
bullshit.
Beautiful.
That's a fantastic
team. What a wonderful
team.
Lineup.
A wonderful episode. I had a lot of fun
We're very glad that you had fun. We had a lot of fun writing this episode.
We did.
The things that we discussed, the conversations we had.
I heard some laughs. I was having to hide in the other room so I didn't get spoiled. But like that was great. That was delightful. Wonderful learning about all these little different critters.
Yep. And hey, listen, happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween
for tomorrow. I hope you guys are going to have the best time on Halloween.
We're going to be at a, you know, shout out to our friend. I won't say her name on the pod, but
she knows who she is.
She knows who she is. We're going to a birthday this weekend after Halloween, a spooky birthday party.
Yep.
And I'm going to have a lot of like cool critters to think about. Cool
exactly.
critters to think about. And looking more at the Borinjor, it does look like a depiction of like a reptilian, you know,
yeah.
where it's like, this is who controls the world.
Well, I mean,
reptilian.
Looks like a one of those like big hair rock stars, but if it was like a velociraptor.
It
yeah, that's
like
what
David
I'm saying.
Bowie.
It looks like...
It's Rod Stewart.
It is Rod Stewart.
It looks like Rod Stewart.
It looks like an Iron Maiden member.
You know, the great aunt that... actually, no, not that great aunt, but one of my great aunts was a big Rod Stewart fan. And she got to meet him and she nearly fucking passed out.
Yeah, I would have come. I got Rod Stewart at power forward.
This is Rod Stewart.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was fantastic. There's such a wide variety of cats
yes.
alleged to live here. And then in terms of our folklore, like, I mean, not so much our folklore. In terms of the Australian cryptid ideas, like, there seems to be two kinds. Either kind of unimaginative other animal in this place, or crazy shit like the Yanma Yahoo, where it's like, oh, this is like a, this is coming from something, from some crazy shit that happened, some real haunted shit from hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. That was fantastic.
Pretty much any time there was like a element of pre-colonial like sources. Oh, good.
Absolutely
great stuff.
Oh, my God.
And, like, we specifically didn't want to make this episode about, like, you know, dreamtime creatures. We specifically looked for a bunch of,
cryptids as opposed to...
And it feels really disrespectful to be like, and now we're talking about this creature from dreamtime folklore, which is, like, that's super fucking demeaning to it.
Creatures that... Like, there are allegations people are making in the last 100 years. Like, I done seen it in the book.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
And Crooked Mick.
Crooked Mick's
a dreamtime creature.
Yeah. Ugh. But, it's something that we did want to approach, being able to be like, hey, that is also part of, I guess, contemporary Australian folklore that isn't necessarily just First Nations Indigenous folklore.
Yeah.
But we also, like, there were a lot of really cool, and I do... To sidebar this, I do really recommend looking into Indigenous Australian folklore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it slaps. It really does fucking slap. And there is a lot of context and weight to it as well.
Mm.
And a lot of things that we did research that we were like, oh, actually, we don't have the chops to manage this in any way that is like fully respectful.
Yeah, and also just contextually doesn't fit what we were talking about. Yeah.
No.
We're mostly talking about quite goofy and like flippant
spooky
sort of
beasties
things.
And critters, you know?
We're talking about quite, you know, facetious things here, and we're making a lot of jokes about it. And
like,
we're
and even
talking
like Yanma Yahoo
creation myths and stuff. That's just, it doesn't fit here because that's just quite,
no,
it would
I mean,
be quite offensive to bring up, you know, creation myths.
We wouldn't call the big turtle that the Earth's on a cryptid.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's just so demeaning.
Yeah. To the big turtle.
Yeah, his name is Mohomoho, actually. So,
his name is Mohomoho.
What?
Oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. That was great. Should we round out?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you everybody so much for joining us. Elle and I had a lot of fun putting together this episode.
I hope you people had fun actually listening to us have this whatever schizophrenia this was.
Yeah.
That's the word of the episode.
It is the word of the episode. It's the word of like my last several months, I think.
Powerful. Powerful. Embrace it.
Welcome back.
embrace the schizophrenia, guys.
Exactly.
We're going to...
Fellow schizophrenics out there, embrace it.
The liberals...
Don't fight it.
And I mean that in the American sense. Not going to like this, but I welcome it. Fucking hit me, bitch.
Hit me, bitch.
I'll say whatever.
Come at me, you limp-wristed.
Let's talk about ADHD next. Let's not do that. All right.
Anyway. So if you like what we're doing and you would love to support us, we'd love that. But you can subscribe to our Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/shouldn'tcome. That's spelled S-H-O-U-L-D-N-T-C-O-M-E.
You missed the A.
Is S-H-O-U-L-D-N-T-A-C-O-M-E. Bitch. Our email is spelt exactly the same, shouldn'tcome@gmail.com. On YouTube, and I do recommend YouTube for this episode so you can have a look at some of our slides. That is youtube.com/@shouldn'tcome. And of course, as always, a demo of Yanni's album is available on Bandcamp at YanniX, that's YANIX.bandcamp.com. Wishing you all a hallo weenie. I hope all your weenies are hallowed. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.